Hi, I'm Darren Peppard. Welcome to the Leaning Into Leadership podcast, the podcast dedicated to today's hardworking leader. Join me every Sunday for leadership insight, inspiration, and a little pep talk to keep you rolling down your road to awesome. Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 135 of the Leaning Into Leadership podcast. My guest on the show today is Josh Korb. And you might be wondering, who is Josh Korb? Well, I'm going to tell you all about him. Josh is not your average educator. You see, Josh started his career as a math teacher, and his drive to innovate led him to become the Director of Technology and Innovation, where he merged his love for teaching and his expertise in instructional technology. But Josh didn't stop there. His entrepreneurial spirit and software engineering skills spurred him to found Master 3DU Incorporated, an edtech startup dedicated to mastery-based teaching and learning. In addition to his entrepreneurial endeavors, Josh has recently authored a brand new book, Be the Cause, An Educator's Guide to Effective Teaching. This practical guide offers clear, actionable strategies for educators to improve student engagement and outcomes. Drawing from personal experience and evidence-based practices, Be the Cause empowers teachers to make a meaningful impact in their classroom. Whether you're a seasoned educator or just starting out, this guide is essential for sparking positive changes in your teaching methods and in your students' lives. Josh and I sat down recently and had a really great conversation, not just about the book, but about his passion for taking that knowledge we have about best practices and turning it into action. Folks, it's a fantastic conversation. You're going to get the entire thing right on the other side of this. Hey leaders, let me tell you a story. It's the story of my first year as a high school principal. I will tell you, I was exhausted, I was overwhelmed, and I lived my life breathing through a snorkel because my head was so far underwater and I didn't think there was a way out. I mean, I was a mess. The 40 feet that it was to move from my assistant principal office down to the principal's office might as well have been a 400-mile trek. I was just absolutely putting in crazy hours. I was trying to do it all, like trying to answer everybody's question, thinking I always had to be the smartest one in the room, and I had to solve everybody's problems. We're talking severe Superman syndrome here, folks. Every day was fire after fire, and all I accomplished was putting out fires. Forget about leading. I was simply trying to survive. Now, after working with a leadership coach, I really was able to get things figured out, get my head from being a firefighter to actually being a leader. But it took work, and I discovered some things that really mattered. And that's why I've created Walk in Your Purpose, 5 Mindsets to Level Up Your Leadership, a free ebook that you can have today at no cost. Just go to walkinyourpurpose.roadtoawesome.net/ebook to download your free copy. Again, that's walkinyourpurpose.roadtoawesome.net/ebook. It's time for you to walk in your purpose, to find joy in your job, and to be the leader you always knew that you could be.
This podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and the podcast to get you there. Explore more podcasts at www.teachbetterpodcastnetwork.com. Now let's get on to the episode.
So I'm asked every now and again, what are some of the things that I miss about being a building level leader? And honestly, the instructional leadership stuff is probably the thing that I miss the most. Any of the principals, superintendents, any of the school leaders that I work with now, when I'm in their schools, I don't want to sit in their office and have conversations. We're up, we're moving, we're going into classrooms because I absolutely love being in classrooms. I love listening to the students in the classroom, watch the teacher at their craft, being their best or working to be their best. And you know, I reflect on that time as an instructional leader. And during that time, that was when some of the most transformational pieces of literature came forward. including, of course, Visible Learning from Jod Handy. And man, Handy's work, it was a game changer, because all of a sudden now we have this research that tells us what actually works in education, what actually moves the needle, literally. If you've seen the book, I mean, it literally shows you where it moves the needle. Unfortunately, what I found as a little bit of a struggle with Handy's book was he wasn't setting out to teach you how to do these things, just to tell you these are truly the things through meta-analysis that genuinely have impact on student learning. Our guest on the show today is Josh Korb, and Josh is taking that work and taking it to the next level with his new book, Be the Cause. And I'm really excited about this. It is a Road to Awesome project. The book has just released. Folks, you've got to get your hands on this thing. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about really making impactful things happen in the classroom. But before we get to that, Josh, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be able to share this work with everybody. It's been a long time coming, and I think I've been like subconsciously writing this book from the very first day that I stepped into the classroom.
Well, that's perfect. So we'll definitely make sure to get a lot of that information out so that everybody has a chance to learn from you. But let's do this first, Josh, before we go there. You mentioned, you know, back when you first started in the classroom. So let's kind of get in the Wayback Machine here. Take us back to that point in time and maybe walk us forward, you know, kind of get everybody oriented on your journey to where you are right now.
Yeah, absolutely. So I started off in the classroom in high school secondary ed math. I fell in love with mathematics, and it was all because of a seventh grade math teacher who saw in me that I was able to share concepts with other classmates and be able to explain topics. And he was like, hey, you should be a math teacher. And ever since seventh grade, I was like, all right, I'm sold. I'm in. And so I started in the math classroom. I taught back in my alma mater. And teaching with the same teachers that taught me only a few years prior at that point. So that was a cool experience. Over time, I ended up taking the shift and jumping to my other passion, which is computer science. And I was able to jump down to the middle school level. And believe me, the transition from teaching 12th graders down to teaching 7th graders is night and day. And if anybody has an opportunity to go teach middle school... If anybody has an opportunity,
that's where I started, man. I started at the middle school level and I jumped forward to high school. So I'm curious. Yeah, keep going. I want to hear about going in the other direction.
Yeah. So I was used to teaching AP statistics, and like those students are there and they're ready to learn. They're ready to like tackle some complex ideas and concepts. And then we jump down to seventh grade and we're learning about hormones sort of at the same time as we're trying to learn about mathematics. And I say every day that like sixth graders are awesome to work with because you can connect with them. They still think you're cool as an adult, right? So I could tell them like dad jokes and they'd laugh and we'd have a good time. Eighth graders, you treat them like young adults. You treat them like a high schooler and they're great. Seventh grade, man, I had no clue. And going in there, it was just such an eye-opening experience. And we had a lot of fun. And it ended up being one of my favorite grades to teach because it was one of the most malleable grades. Like I was getting them in their prime of middle school where they're ready to transition and start making decisions about who they're going to be the next couple of years before they enter out into the real world.
Yeah, you know, middle schoolers are—they're just so unique because, like you said, you know, they do still at a point think you're kind of cool. They're still trying to figure out who they are, obviously. But middle school kids, you know, I taught eighth grade for 5 years, and I found those middle school kids. I mean, they would absolutely run through a wall for you if they knew that you cared about them and that you know, really could, support who they are and what they're trying to accomplish. So let's go a little further with this. I'm really, really curious. So you go from 12th graders to down to 6th, 7th, and 8th graders. Were there some things you missed about the high school kids, or were you just like, wow, middle school, I'm all in?
Yeah. So at the beginning, I realized how independent high schoolers are, and how they don't necessarily need a lot of direction, as much as middle school students do. So routines were absolutely important. And inside my book, and we'll get into this a little bit more in a little bit, but I talk about freedom within form and controlled chaos. And if you would walk into my classroom, like, it was always humming, like kids were talking, kids were up out of their seats, but it was all structured in a way that we knew what the norms were. We knew what the expectations were. We knew how to hold each other accountable. But that took a lot more time to develop at a middle school level than it did at a high school level.
We will return to the Leaning Into Leadership podcast in just a moment. But first, let me ask you a question. Have you ever said to yourself, man, I should write a book? Well, if you have, then let me ask you another question. What's holding you back? What keeps you from taking the step that moves you from, I have an idea about a book, to, I am a published author? From experience, I would bet it's probably you're wondering who would even want to read a book that I wrote. Maybe you're questioning the idea. Is it unique enough? Is it valid enough? Is it good enough to be a book worthy of having published? Hey, as a best-selling author myself, I can tell you, most writers have had the exact same feelings at some point in time during their writing journey. Here at Road to Awesome, we believe in cultivating leaders by elevating voices and promoting positivity. And a part of that work is publishing books for educators by educators. Go to roadtoawesome.net and hit the Contact Us button to set up a free, no obligation conversation about your book idea. Hey, educators, we've all had incredible experiences. We all have amazing stories, and every one of them deserves to be told. Go to roadtoawesome.net, hit the Contact Us button. Let's have that conversation about your book idea. And now, back to the Leaning Into Leadership podcast. All right, so let's talk a little bit about the book. We'll talk a little bit about, you know, kind of the setup, some of the strategies, some of those types of things. But, you know, I'm always curious. I ask people this here on the show quite frequently, if they have written a book. What really motivated you to want to sit down and put a book together? Because let's be honest, that's a big endeavor. When you decide, hey, I'm going to do this, and you follow through and actually finish writing a book as you have done, That's a big chore. So tell us kind of what motivated you. What are you hoping to accomplish with having this book out?
Yeah, so I'm gonna jump back nearly like a decade, because I talked about how, like, when I stepped into the classroom, I started learning and growing as all teachers do. We have to learn, we have to adapt, we have to improve our practice. And but within the first 2 years, I was in like a serious accident, and I ended up becoming temporarily paralyzed for about like 8 to 9 months, and I had to relearn how to walk, I had to relearn how to talk, and just do the basic sort of needs and necessities of everyday life. And from that experience, I realized, like, right in that moment, that my life was never going to be the same. Now, fortunately, I regained all my, like, physical ability, my mental capacity is still there, and, like, so I didn't lose anything, but I gained so much from that experience, because I realized, like, with a flip of a switch, I went from being able to do anything but didn't have the motivation behind it to being able to do nothing and have no control over it. And I think about the impact that that had on my life, and I want to try and prevent that from happening to somebody else. It shouldn't take a life-altering event for us to realize the potential that we have as individuals, but also the impact that we have on our students each and every day. And those impacts are super small. So it was really over the past like 10 years, I've been just gathering just what are best practices. And that's where, like, John Hattie comes into the picture. Like, he laid an incredible framework that we're able to draw from, but I was always questioning, like, what does it look like? What does it feel like? What does it sound like in the classroom? And that was really the motivation behind all of it. Because again, I go back and I think, man, if everybody could experience not the physical side of everything that happened to me, but if everybody could experience this, like, eye-opening moment of how much power we actually have, because sometimes it takes something or someone that influences you, that impacts you, to change your perspective on the world and change your perspective on what you do on a daily basis. So from that experience, I was able to start crafting this book unknowingly for the longest time. And then ultimately, when I shifted into a more of an administrative coach role, that's when I started to realize the impact that I could have, not just on students, but the impact that I could have on teachers. And I started presenting at conferences. I started connecting with teachers through Twitter and like all over the globe, and just being able to see like what works for you. Why don't we share that information? We don't have to be siloed. We don't have to be like by ourselves in a room. Like, we have so many resources at our fingertips, and I wanted to collect all those into one piece that you could sort of refer to, like a handbook going on from day to day. Like, hey, I want something new. I want to try something in my class, and I want to pull from somewhere that's going to give me a resource that works and that's proven time and time again. And let's see if it works in the classroom. And if it doesn't, guess what? Let's try another one. And that's the thing. It's about iteration after iteration. And ultimately, I ended up becoming a director of innovation. And I love sharing that title because I still don't know what it means half the time. But what's cool about it is this opportunity where I'm able to explore and really find what makes a teacher great, and try and replicate that, because we can all learn from each other. I am never going to be done growing. I am never going to be done learning. And the sooner that we can accept that, and the sooner that we can realize that there's more out there, the quicker we're going to be able to see those results transpire in the classroom.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, you kind of open up the book with this conversation, this reflection, if you will, you know, challenging your readers through an exercise to, you know, kind of think back on those educators who left a positive, positive footprint on you, and then also maybe the ones who left maybe not as positive of a footprint. And you kind of take us forward and start to walk us through into this effect framework, which isn't just, you know, simply the word effect in effective, but rather it's an actual acronym, and it's a framework. It's a roadmap. Let's talk a little bit about that effect framework and what you see that being in terms of those best practices in the classroom.
Yeah. And it all stems back to sort of this idea of change. Is change has to be constant, especially in how fast paced the world is today. But it can be overwhelming. And I recognize that. And I think as teachers now more than ever, we recognize that with technology changing, with we were sort of chatting before our talk here about the political climate is changing. And there are so many changes that if we try and take everything on all at once, it could be overwhelming, and it might fail. And we need a way that we can sort of compartmentalize what are some aspects of my teaching style that I want to work on. And also, what are some aspects that, man, I feel like I'm knocking out of the park. We need to be prideful of that. We need to acknowledge those pieces as well. So inside the book, we talk about the EFFECT framework, and that stands for engage, foster, facilitate, embrace, collaborate, and transform. And sort of breaking those down, if I could, in just to like so one or two sentences, is this engage piece is how do we turn our students into active participants of a lesson, not just recipients, not just sitting in the passenger seat. We want to ultimately engage them to a point where they're in the driver's seat, where they're making cognizant choices about what they're learning, how they're learning, and because that's how you build intrinsic motivation. And then from there, we jump over to another category of foster, and that's fostering creativity and problem solving. If you think about what employers are looking for today, they're not looking for necessarily degrees at this point. They're not looking for certifications. They're not looking for just being able to know things. They want you to be able to do things. They want you to be able to create. I think back to when, if we go back to like cassette players, right? Cassette players were a new innovation, and within a couple years or replaced by CDs. In a couple years, like, CDs are obsolete. I remember getting into my most recent car that we bought, and I brought my like pack of CDs that I've always listened to, like back from the 90s. And I tried to slide them into, I was like, wait, there's no CD player in here anymore. So just being able to creatively think about sort of solutions and spark their curiosity is really how we want students thinking about the world and transferring those skills. And facilitate is the next, is the second F, and that facilitate this whole chapter is sort of geared towards redefining who we are as teachers. We're no longer the sole purveyors of all knowledge. Think about how much knowledge I can do by, or how quickly I can find any information that I want just by opening up my phone. Within seconds, I can get more information online than I could if I was just listening to Mr. Korb talk at the front of the room for an hour, right? So how does our role shift? And that's where I explore in this chapter, where we are facilitating the learning process. So again, students aren't just recipients, but they're active participants in the knowledge acquisition. Next up is collaboration. Collaboration is huge, but students don't necessarily know how to do that right from day one. They need to be taught how to collaborate. They need to know the soft skills of how to communicate with one another. So in this chapter, we talk about it forming a classroom culture that all stems from this idea of collaboration. And I realize as I'm saying collaboration, I misspelled effect as we're talking here. I'm going to backtrack and talk about embrace real quick. And that's really embracing the culture and the differences within our classroom, because that's huge. Every student has a story. No matter what, they come into the classroom and you have never read their story before. And that's your job as a teacher, to get to know them and to help them write the next chapter, wherever that chapter is going to take them. And I just think of that as a huge opportunity, where on day one or by day two or three, if you don't know the kids' names in your classroom, that's a huge disservice to them, because that's one of the few things that they own in life at that point. And if you start calling them by name, start mentioning some of their interests, start asking them about like their family, their pets, they're going to be so much more engaged in the lesson. You're going to have so much more of an impact, because they know that you care about them. Students don't know how much you care students don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. That quote was shared with me by Dr. Thomas Starmack from Bloomsburg University during one of my first teaching courses, and it stuck with me to this day. It was teaching of mathematics. We didn't talk about mathematics for probably 3 weeks into the course, because he said, if you can't get their attention, if you can't hold their engagement throughout the lesson, it doesn't matter what you have to share with them, they're not going to listen. So just having relationships with students and forming relationships as a class and highlighting our differences is how we grow collectively as a learning community. And then ultimately, all these things are like building up and building momentum, and you're making positive ripples that turn into this like tidal wave of transformation because of all of these small little pieces that you're making these changes of. And I like to equate this to a story that, like, my dad and I used to go camping all the time. I think back to, we would go to Gifford Pinchot State Park in Pennsylvania, and we would go there every single summer, multiple times. And one of the things we'd love to do was skip rocks. And we would go down, we would try and find like the flattest rock possible, and, you know, like aerodynamics and everything. And we'd talk the entire time we were there. And at some point, like, the skipping turned to like throwing the rocks into the lake. And then, but what was so amazing was that, like, one small little rock, you would see that ripple start to gain momentum throughout the entire lake until it touched areas that you couldn't even see anymore. And I think, and I equate that to our impact as a teacher. Like, there, especially I think about our younger teachers, or younger level teachers, like kindergarten teachers, who might not see the fruits of their labor for 18 years or 20 years or 30 years, where a student you see at like Walmart at like 3 a.m. because you forgot to grab like milk for your kids. Like, you go there, you're in sweatpants, you're in a t-shirt. I'm saying because this has happened to me. So, like,
I was gonna say, that sounded oddly specific right there, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And like, a kid will literally run across the room if you've made a positive impact, and will say how much they enjoyed your class, or that one lesson really changed my perspective. Or I've had students who have shared with me before that, like, hey, Mr. Korb, I used to hate math, and now I'm going for actuarial science. To make that leap is a huge shift, and I know that I played a part in that. No matter how small, we all have an effect on the kids in our classroom. It's just our choice of what that effect's going to look like and how can we maximize it.
Yeah, I love that so much. You know, I talk about it quite frequently, but it takes me to something that I think about often, and that's, one of the things that we actually can control is ourself, our actions, how we choose to show up, the energy level that we bring each and every day into our classroom, into our building, and into the lives of others that are around us. And being very conscious of the choices we're making in the classroom, first from that relationship standpoint, and then we'll get to the pedagogy stuff in a couple of minutes. Kudos to your teaching mathematics professor, because that's absolutely spot on. You know, if we're not building those relationships with the kids, with the people that we lead, if we're in a building leadership role, a district leadership role, if you're not leaning into those relationships, then you're absolutely right. All this other stuff, you might as well stop now. Don't finish reading the book. Don't try to purvey some knowledge on them. If you can't build a relationship with them, you are going to struggle. And certainly that was something that I saw in some of my very best and in some of my teachers that struggled the most. That was honestly when I know I touched on it right at the beginning of this, but going through your book and hitting that part with that reflection piece in there. Think about the teachers who made a great impact and those who did not make a great impact. It had me walking the halls of my high school where I was the principal, and I was seeing faces of those who I felt were the most successful, and then the faces of a handful who just really struggled. And it wasn't because they didn't know their content area. It's never because they don't know their content area. It's because they can't make connections. They can't, or they don't want to build connections or invest in those relationships. Well, again, we're going to get to the pedagogical stuff here in a couple of minutes. I just want to stay on this just a touch longer, Josh. I know what I say to people when it comes to the relationship piece. I want to give you that opportunity too. If I'm somebody listening to this and I'm not one who believes in the relationship piece, there's probably nobody listening who doesn't believe in the relationship piece, let's be honest. But let's just pretend. All right. Maybe we have a leader listening who's like, yeah, I got a handful of those teachers too. Give me something gold, Josh. Give me something here that I can say to help them understand the value of relationships.
Well, I mean, I'm going to go to a story here. And one of my most, I used to say, and again, I'm just being vulnerable and saying, like, I used to have, quote, bad kids. There are no bad kids. And that's the first thing that I want to get off the table is, like, I used to be a teacher who said that, like, oh, like, so-and-so, man, like, he doesn't listen, he doesn't, but where am I putting all that blame? I'm putting it all in the student. But to, like, your point, like, you can only control yourself, but you have a massive influence on a child. Think about, like, the time that you spend with a child and to get to know their story, to get to know who they are, how they tick, like, what their likes and interests are. That might be their only positive adult interaction for the day, because you don't know what their home life is. And usually, like, if a student is acting up, or if a student is calling out or seeking attention, maybe not necessarily the right way, there's always a reason behind it. And getting to the bottom of what that reason is, but giving them the opportunity to share that with you rather than making assumptions, because assumptions kill. And assumptions are going to kill your ability to connect with the student right from the beginning. So one thing that I would always try and do is, beyond just getting to know them and getting to know their names, I would actually appoint them, like, jobs and roles and responsibilities in the classroom. And those were reserved for some of my more challenging students who would test the boundaries in the class. I remember one student in particular, we'll call him Alan for our sake, but Alan would come into class every single day, and he would never go to his seat. He would talk while I was talking. He would try and pick on some of the other students. And it definitely takes a toll. It's tough to be able to work with a student in a classroom who might be seeking attention, again, not necessarily the best way possible. But leaning into that instead of just being reactive and trying to be proactive, how can we turn every situation into a positive force of change? So I ended up taking Alan aside and I was like, hey, listen, I see that you have like relationships with some of the students in class, and you're able to talk to pretty much everybody. You say some funny stuff from time to time. I said, how would you like to be my assistant in class? And I said, or my classroom, or my classroom teacher's assistant. That's what we called it. And he was like, what do you mean by that? And so after I explained it a little bit, I was like, hey, you can help me, like, pass out papers. You can help me like answer questions from your classmates if you know the answer. And like, after I gave him that little bit of empowerment, he was a totally different person. We had a totally different dynamic in the classroom, and he took ownership leadership of not just his actions, but also the actions of the whole class. Because I state from day one, I said, there's only one rule that matters, and that's we're treating everybody with respect. And that's where when push comes to shove, if you have to ask yourself, am I going to disrespect somebody by doing this? Then you know it's not the right choice. And so just being able to get through to Alan and be able to really coach him up and make him a part of the solution rather than just leaving him to be part of the problem was huge. It was a huge dynamic shift. So I would have teachers who kept asking me like, oh, like, what did you do? Like, he comes to my class and he's off the wall, or he doesn't listen to anything. And I said, well, did you take a minute to get to know him? And like, I knew about his home life. I knew about what pets he had. He would tell me every day what he had for breakfast for some weird reason. But that was the relationship that we had. He would laugh at my jokes and then tell me they were terrible, and that's perfectly fine. We had that like joking relationship, and we got to a point where I could trust him to do things in class that other teachers couldn't. And it was just because I took the purposeful time to do that. So be intentional with your actions, get to know your students, and give them the benefit of the doubt. When they come in, don't listen to what other people say, because when they're in your class, you're the only one who's impacting the room. So,
yeah, I think that's huge right there. I think there's way too often, I know I was guilty of it at times too, where, you know, a label will get attached to a kid, whether that's bad kid, talkative, you know, great student. I mean, just hundreds of other ones, I'm sure. And we buy into that. Right? We buy into that label instead of just giving, you know, the kid the benefit of the doubt and just getting to know the kid, you know, or making, like you said, making assumptions, you know, based on, you know, who their family is. You know, I'm the middle child, and you know, I have a super, super high achieving older sister, and it was really hard to follow her. Not that I wasn't a good student. I was the kid though, who wasn't, you know, as engaged. I was a bit of a teacher pleaser, but you know, I don't know. I just didn't work that hard. And I think some of it over time came from everybody expected me to be just like Krista, and I'm not. And I'm sure poor Tammy, you know, the third one of us, she probably just had no chance by the time she got to the school. But anyway, yeah, we do. We have this tendency to maybe attach onto those labels a little too much. So definitely, folks, let's heed Josh's words there and make sure we're not chasing those labels around too much. Okay, so let's do this. Let's dive in a little bit more into the second half of the book. And you actually have, I believe it's 8 strategy categories for the effect strategy. Things like active learning strategies, collaborative learning strategies, technology-based, and so forth. We can go a lot of different directions here. I kind of want to, you know, make this maybe a bit of a choose your own adventure here, and I'll let you do the choosing. Maybe share a little bit about how those categories come about, and then maybe dive into one or two and just give us maybe a little bit of insight.
Yeah, and I struggled with this at the beginning because there are so many different teaching styles. There are so many different activities that you could do with kids, and they all overlap because ultimately they're going to have a positive effect no matter what. If you and when we dive in, I'll talk about one or two here in a second, like really specific activities that you could do. But with each one of these strategies, there's like over 60 of them. I really try and set it up with the why, the how, and the right now, where the why is the understanding of the purpose behind it and how it and the how is going to be your process of setting up the activity. And then ultimately the right now are the things that you can try maybe even tomorrow in your classroom. But a sort of a heed of caution is if you go into this book thinking, oh, I'm going to go in, I'm going to pick an activity, class starts in 5 minutes, let's go try it. It might work. But if you really want it to be successful, we need to make sure that you build the framework and the form before you start allowing the freedom to take place. So that's why I really encourage everybody to dive in the first part of this book. Think about those areas and those characteristics of the effect framework that you want to grow in and you want to sort of learn from. And then once that's sort of established, then we start jumping into some of these strategies that if you have a good classroom culture, if you have a good classroom climate, if you have routines and structures in place, these are going to be so much more effective. So that's my disclaimer that I just want to share right from the beginning. So one of my favorites and one of the most fun, I guess, is these active learning strategies, because a lot of these are really simple. I'm thinking about one in particular, which is called Jumping Jack Jam, which is just a brain break. And all of these are ones that can be adapted for any grade level, no matter what. Even when you get into more of the cognitive, like challenging ones, like I'm thinking about the Socratic seminars, where you're really thinking about thinking. Kids, even in elementary school, can start doing that. It needs a little bit more scaffolding, but don't count them out. So any one of these strategies can be adapted. But Jumpin' Jack Jam is one in particular where you can actually set this up where if you jump up and you say to the kids, okay, three times during this class period, we're going to get up, we're going to do some jumping jacks together, I'm going to throw in some music, but keep it a secret. Don't tell them when it's going to happen. So they're sort of on edge like the entire time, anticipating that thing happening. And then when it does happen, jump in and join in with them. And be careful, don't trip and fall. Like that's, even though like they'll get a kick out of it, and they'll definitely be engaged at that point. Again, speaking from experience, but they're going to be so much more engaged and ready for it because they're anticipating it throughout the class. And the why behind all of this is because anytime you incorporate a brain break, it allows the students to sort of reset. Because during their time, if they're listening to you like teach a lesson, or if they're doing an activity, their attention span and their ability to retain that knowledge is going to start going downhill really rather quickly after about 20 minutes. And after that 20 minutes, it's sort of useless to continue on, because you're going to have to go back and reteach it so much more. So taking that time where after 15 minutes, you throw on the music, they know what to do. They stand up, they do jumping jacks, or I've done push-ups before, any physical activity to just get the blood moving. And then you jump right back into the lesson. But again, the structure behind that is they know that when the music starts, we do the activity, but when the music stops, they're right back to their seats, so they're right back to their groups, and they're back to working. And that took a lot of time, because what are students naturally going to want to do after they do an activity? Sit there and chat and talk and sort of get off topic. So just, again, providing that structure, providing the lanes for them to freely drive in between them is going to be huge for that. So active learning strategy at the very beginning, one of those sections, those are quick activities, I'd say, out of all of them, that I think can make a lot of positive impact when you're talking about engagement inside of the classroom.
Yeah, that's excellent. Love it. Love it. Let's maybe grab one more here. You've talked about some active ones. I'd like to hear maybe, something from, let's go with a little bit of personalized learning strategies. So that's something that's a big challenge right now. I think a lot of teachers, want to move in this direction. That's something that I'm sure a lot of people hear from their administrators. We want to do a little bit more personalized learning. It's certainly something that, in having conversations with parents, that boy, we really, we're really dialing in and allowing students to have some voice and some choice. Maybe share a strategy that you have in there that might pique somebody's interest with personal learning strategies.
Yeah. And one thing to share is sort of, we always hear about student voice and choice, right? I think those are those buzzwords that came about a couple years ago. And we talk about the ability to provide students that opportunity to choose. I go back to choose your own adventure. But that doesn't have to necessarily just be the learning that's happening. It doesn't have to be just the assessments that are happening. It could be the entire experience. And that's a really scary thought as a teacher. And I think that some people gasped when I said that, because when you think about 25 people in a classroom and them having 25 potentially different learning paths that they're following, that is a scary thought. There needs to be a system and a structure in place. So inside the book, I talk about in the beginning of the book a little bit, where we dive into why it's important to talk about personalized learning, and especially when you start scaling that up to multiple students. And one of the most beneficial things that you can do with kids is teach them the ability of self-reflection. That is not something that students are naturally born with. They're very inquisitive when they're born. They have a lot of curiosity. But when they, where they truly start to learn is where they reflect on the learning process overall. So I'm sure that a lot of the listeners here have done like, hey, give me fist to five, or thumbs up, thumbs down, or have like cards that show like where they are on the learning scale or learning goals. And like that is great, but it's only as good as the user that's using them. If they're not being truthful about who they are and how they learn, you're really going to miss the mark when it comes to understanding where they are in their learning progression. When it comes back to like standards-based grading, if that's something that you're doing in the classroom, or if you're trying to do like a progression of learning from like the beginning of the course to the end of the course, really students need to be the one that's driving that reflection piece. So inside the book, every single strategy that we have here, I close every single strategy with some reflection questions for you as a teacher to assess sort of the how it went as it from a teacher's perspective. But also there's student questions that are in here too. They may need adapted for some younger grades, but overall we want students to start reflecting on how they learn, not just what they're learning. So one of the strategies in here is called student voice. And when we take a look at why it's important, encouraging student voice and choice in the classroom, in classroom decisions is a teaching approach that really empowers students to take an active role in their learning. I talked before about how important it is to put them in the driver's seat because they need to be able to make educated choices based on their past experience. If they know that they can't work with so-and-so in the class, or they know they can't work effectively by listening to music or by doing a mind map of something, that's just not necessarily the learning style for the topic. They need to be able to have the freedom to choose that a better way that they're going to learn. So having choice boards in place, I talk about a little bit here, having their ability to create their own assessments is huge as well. But again, it all stems back to them not only just understanding the content, but understanding how they learn and why they're learning it as well. So really taking the time to build their capacity to reflect on their own learning. And that just comes with repetition.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Just so much good stuff there. We've reached that point in the show, though, Josh, where we're going to go to that last question, the same question I ask everybody here on the show. This is the Leaning Into Leadership podcast. So, Josh Korb, tell me how you are leaning into leadership right now.
Well, I mean, I could easily go with the obvious of like I wrote a book, but it doesn't stop there. It doesn't even start there. I think every single leader's journey starts with the people and the interactions that you have on a daily basis. We talk all the time about it, walking the walk, not just talking the talk. I think we need to like turn that up a notch and really think about how we're going to inspire the fire in other people, because every single person who, if you're a leader listening to this, every single person is a leader in their own capacity, whether they're leading students, whether they're leading their colleagues, whether you're a principal or an administrator, everybody has the ability to lead. They just need to be cultivated in whatever area they want to grow in. And that's our job as leaders, just be able to help others reflect on their leadership journey. We just talked about reflecting as students. Reflecting as teachers is the quickest way that we can get from point A to point B or C or D or E. Like wherever we want to go, we got to have a process in place that we're going to be able to get there. And that's where I love, like the catchphrase this year for me is inspire the fire. And that really comes back to really thinking about what motivates and inspires each person that I work with and interact with, and being able to tap into that. So personalizing our leadership approach is just as important as personalizing our learning approach with students.
Yeah, that's excellent stuff, man. I really appreciate it. Josh, I know people are going to want to get in touch with you. They're going to want to reach out and have a conversation. They're going to want to get a copy of the book. Tell us, how do people get in touch with you?
Yeah. So the best way is on my website. And that's something I want to talk about as well, is at www.youcanbethecause.com. I am building a resource library there that you're able to take this book and become a member of the site, and you're able to access the Ripple Library. And this is something I'm really, really excited about, is it extends whatever's inside of the book and it creates a place that we can continue to add all of the positive ripples that we're creating inside of our classroom. So there's already going to be the sort of snapshots of each of the book ripples, that the effects that we can provide in our classroom, or the strategies that we want to try and test out. But I'm going to continue to add to those. I have set up for the next year, every single week, there's going to be five or six different strategies that are going to be posted to there. And you're able to go on, you're able to filter and search based on the effect framework, filter and search based on strategy category or grade level or content area. And it's just going to continue to grow as I continue to work with more teachers across the U.S. And start working with other educators from all over. We're going to start continuing to do the wave. I like to call that. I'm really leaning into this whole like water theme, right? Yeah, so we're going to do the wave together. You think about how cool that is to watch at a stadium where they do the wave the whole way around. That's the one thing as educators. We have this massive professional learning network, and we can constantly learn from one another. So I created a place called the Ripple Library where you're able to go on and search for any activity that you want. And it's just a way to extend your learning as an educator. So www.youcanbethecause.com, great way. There's contact forms on there. You can order the book directly from there, and I'll sign it. I'll send it to you with some swag, some stickers, a discount that you can share with somebody else, because ultimately I don't want this resource to just sit on a shelf. I want you to be able to access this at any time and share it with your colleagues too, because we all learn and grow together. You can email me, mrjcorb@gmail.com. Again, you can fill out the form on the website. You can reach me on Twitter or Instagram, Mr. J. Corb or Mr. Josh Corb, respectively. And I just love connecting with educators all over. If you're interested in bulk ordering, hit up my website. I have information on there. If you're interested in booking me for a keynote or to work with your staff, I'd love to do it. I love working with teachers every single day.
There you go, man. All of that is just absolutely awesome stuff, folks. We'll put all that down in the show notes for you. Make sure you get down there, check that stuff out. Josh Corb, number one, congratulations on the book. And number two, thank you so much for joining me here on Leaning Into Leadership.
All right. Thanks for having me, Darren.
All right, folks, pure leadership gold there from Josh Corb. Make sure that you get down there in the show notes and check out all things Josh Corb. You can do that at youcanbethecause.com. That's linked up in the show notes. Again, Josh, thank you so much for coming on the show. And now it's time for a pep talk. Well, this week, folks, what I want to talk about are the traps that we can fall into as leaders. You know, we're at that time of year when we can kind of see the end in sight, and it's easy for us to fall into some traps because we're thinking about next year, we're thinking about hiring, we're thinking about all these other things, right? But today I want to share with you something that I shared in my blog this week, and I'm not going to give you the whole thing. You'll have to go actually look at the blog. It's linked in the show notes. But just a couple of traps that I think leaders really need to avoid as they finish up their school year. And number one is going to be neglecting staff morale. You know, it's easy for fatigue to set in. I was at a bunch of schools here in the last couple of weeks, and that feeling, right, that exhaustion, that just you're worn down, right? As a leader, you really need to lean in and do some things to help boost morale. And some of those proactive things that you can do are just simply be there, be present, be visible, you know, do everything you can to help maintain that positive atmosphere. The second trap I want to tell you not to fall into is overlooking student needs. You know, there's so many different things that happen during the course of the school year. And right now, many of you are going through your testing cycles. You're going through hiring cycles. You're going through a budget cycle. Some of you are dealing with, you know, budget cuts or reduction in force or whatever it might be. Don't lose sight of the needs of your students. It's really, really important that we continue to think about what it is they need, whether that's counseling services, academic interventions, something to do with just that supportive learning environment. Right. And then I'm going to give you one more. All right. And that's don't ignore professional development. Right. Don't set it to the side. Don't just say, you know what, we'll worry about that next year. Take the opportunity to continue to grow and support your staff. If you neglect your staff, there's a good chance you could lose your staff. lean into them, continue to support their growth. Now, it doesn't have to be anything huge or major, but take the opportunity to sit down with them and continue to foster that culture of continuous growth and continuous learning. There you go, folks. That's what I'm thinking about this week. That's what I think is important in leadership this week. Get out there. Have a Road to Awesome week. Thank you for listening to the Leaning Into Leadership podcast, brought to you by Road to Awesome. Don't forget, click subscribe, give a review, and share this with somebody who might also enjoy leaning into leadership.